And hello, everybody. It's Giovanni McGuire, coming back on April 17th, 2024, for an edition of the By Jove Show. And my apologies ahead of time for being out for the count there for a while. It's been roughly 4 or 5 months since I did a show. Last one was December 2nd. But I guess there are reasons for that, so I'm hoping to get back into the habit of doing this again, starting now. It's no mistake that it's 2 days after tax day. Got all my information to my accountant, but apparently there are a lot of people who didn't get their information there to the accountant with enough time that everybody get their taxes filed, so I had to file for an extension, but I got my bookkeeping in about a month ago, but it was too late, so we'll just have to wait for that refund this year. But I always like it when April 15th is come and gone, because it seems like a lot of things lead up to that, and once you're past that point, somehow you're at the end of the school year. If you have any connection to anybody who's in school, you're looking forward to the summer, hopefully past most of the worst winter weather. We had a storm here last night, tornado warnings and such, but all is well. But I guess I can get into some of the reasons I was out for such a long time. Some good, some bad. So I was about to go on a 3-week vacation during the Christmas and New Year's holiday to go see family members on the East Coast. And literally the day before I was about to leave, had everything ready, a little bit of a car trip, and my car was all good shape, oil, tires, and everything was good. I was getting ready to go the day before we were leaving, and I noticed a little bulge in my pelvis area, and I was like, huh, what's that? Well, it turned out that when I went to the doctor the next day, I had a hernia. So I didn't feel any pain, didn't really feel all that much discomfort either, but it was a little odd looking, so I was like, huh, did I not notice that for months, years? I don't know, but I definitely noticed it the day before we left, and so I had to cancel my trip, just an abundance of caution, because sometimes these things can become emergencies, but mine didn't end up being that way, but I kind of had to just cancel my vacation plan. So that was a real bummer. I was looking forward to that time off. But on the other hand, I spent the holidays here in my home and with my daughter, and we made the best of it. We had, pretty good run of it. So anyway, had that happen, and then I was going to see my mother, my sister, I wasn't able to do that. But just about a week later, in the beginning of January, turned out that my mother, who was 94 years old, became ill, and we weren't exactly sure what it was. She woke up one day and was not able to raise her arms above her head, above her shoulders. She couldn't raise her arms in any fashion, and so that was kind of alarming. So we, my sister took her to the emergency room, and what we were trying to figure out what it was, if it was a blood clot or something like that. She had just broken her hip a year and a half before that, and everything seemed to be on the mend. Her blood pressure was a bit out of control, but trying to get that back into shape. But it turned out that it was not a blood clot. It was related to congestive heart failure. Now, my mother had a heart attack close to 20 years ago, and she had the little procedure they do to clear out your arteries, and she was fine from that point on. everything was going well. But once her blood pressure got out of hand and she wasn't controlling it, the doctor wasn't really doing a great job of, you know, interceding there. It seems like her heart just started to become more injured, and within about 1, 2, 3 weeks or so, on January 28th, she passed away. So it was a very, very quick decline for her. She lived to be 94 years old. She had a long life, but I wouldn't say it was without challenges. She had many challenges in her life. I don't think the record has really been set straight in terms of my mother's life, because I think she got a lot of unfair treatment from a lot of people, including other family members. But I'm gonna get into that in a future show. It's a kind of a personal thing, but I think people will relate to the dynamics of, let's say, the extended family. So, yeah, and I just finished writing something that had to do with that, so it's all coming full circle. Something that I revised from a piece I did 25 years ago, which I'm about to publish. So that was probably the thing that really was most alarming, most difficult to deal with. But as part of the hernia thing, once I was diagnosed with the hernia, I unfortunately had a second rather traumatic incident happen that really wasn't traumatic, except for the fact that someone made a mistake. So when I went to get the it was determined that I had a hernia, and it actually, I thought I had one hernia. I actually had three hernias. So that kind of shocked me. But when I went to get the preoperative evaluation, so that kind of threw me for a loop. But then, whenever I go to the doctor, I have kind of this white coat syndrome with my blood pressure, and there are various historical reasons for that. Because when I was younger, I had a heart murmur, and people listened to my heart. It would make me nervous, and I've just never been able to shake it, really. But every time I go there, my heart rate goes up to whatever doctor, whether I'm ill or not. I get nervous, so my heart rate goes up and my blood pressure goes up, and then it very quickly goes down after the visit. But anyway, of course, I check it at home, and it's always pretty good. But anyway, I went in, and they noticed that. They said, "Wow, your heart is kind of moving along, and you're pressure's pretty high, and what's going on?" And I'm like, "Well, this always happens. This is not unusual for me, so don't worry about it." But one of the things I had to do was not just get a whole series of blood tests to make sure that my immunity was okay before the operation. There's also a preoperative electrocardiogram. So they hook you up to the machine and listen to your heart rate. And I said, "Well, I'm a little nervous right now. I don't think it's probably the best time for me to go get an EKG." But they're like, "Well, if you don't get it now, it might be a while." And I said, "Oh, I don't want to delay anything." Because they were saying, my surgery was going to be sometime, relatively soon. Thank goodness, because I got nervous about that, of course. But I went to the EKG and got it done, nonetheless, thinking. And of course, I warned the person who was taking it. I said, "Look, you're going to see that my heart is racing. You're going to see my blood pressure is very high. And so just take that into account when you see the results." So I take it, and the person doesn't say anything to me. When I leave, I get in my car. And this is in a major hospital in a downtown area where it's not easy to get parking. So when I came in, I was already a little bit agitated, trying to get a parking space just to show up for the appointment. But I left the hospital, and on my way home, I got a call from the surgeon's office, who was going to do the hernia operation. And I said, "Well, you better come back, because you had a regular reading on your EKG. There's something wrong. It looks like you're having some kind of arrhythmia, and you need to go to the emergency room right away." So I'm like, "Oh my God, am I going to drop dead any minute?" I felt perfectly fine, other than I was nervous, but I was already calming down and ready to go on with my day. So I went back to the emergency room, and I thought, "Well, I'm having trouble parking again, and should I just park it, anywhere and not worry about it? I could drop dead any minute, I guess." But somehow I thought, you know, I just don't feel like this seems a little odd. So I spent 15 minutes going around in circles to get a parking space. I go into the ER and they look at me and they say, what's wrong? Because it doesn't look like there's anything wrong with me. I mean, I'm perfectly normal looking. And I'm just a little kind of panicky because of this, what they said. And so they retook my blood pressure. They retook my all this stuff. I go into the ER and they take another EKG and, you know, I explain again, yeah, I'm nervous, you know. And they're like, oh, okay. And well, in the end, the cardiologist and the attending emergency room physician, if that's what you call them, comes over and they say, you're not having any kind of arrhythmia. They read the chart wrong. I'm like, oh my God, you got to be kidding me. So I spent the entire day in the emergency room thinking that, you know, there could be a possibility that I'm either going to have some drastic emergency operation have to happen or I'm going to just drop dead any minute. It turned out it was all a mistake. Somebody had misread, in fact, two people had misread the EKG. So, but, I was still in the emergency room and they're like, we're going to give you fluids. You seem dehydrated. I'm like, okay, fine, you know. And so, you know, the nurse comes in and says, well, let me just take your blood pressure one more time. I said, hey, dude, if you can take my blood pressure, it's just going to go way up and we're going to have to wait another 2 hours until I calm down to. And he's like, okay, you're out of here. So, it's interesting how that works. But anyway, I was discharged and they sent me the bill for $500, which is my insurance, whatever you want to call it, payment for an emergency visit. So I was like, I'm gonna eventually go back and appeal this charge because, you know, I shouldn't have to pay for that. And of course, the official diagnosis was dehydration. And I was like, well, I mean, come on. If I was dehydrated, it wasn't any worse than any other day. But anyway, you know, when you look at the bill, it's like thousands and thousands of dollars to give me two bags of fluids. So kind of found the whole thing ironic. But anyway, I didn't have to go back and get another one. And I had already had blood tests done. So I was ready for my surgery. So day comes around for surgery. And, I've got about a month to wait until I have my surgery. So I'm nervous and I'm kind of trying to talk to my doctor to give me some pills to, you know, anti-anxiety medicine to calm me down. And I'm talking to my therapist to kind of work through it in my head. And, you know, I actually did a pretty good job, I think, of getting myself ready for it and not getting too crazy about it. But, cause I just don't like any kind of medical stuff. But anyway, I was kind of proud of myself because actually when I got to the day of the surgery, everything went very well. Everybody seemed to be listening to me. Everybody seemed to be concerned, and in a good way, and seemed to be doing their job properly. And the anesthesiologist came in and said, you know, hey, you seem like you're a little, and I'm like, yeah, well, I have to say this every time to everybody. My blood pressure is going to be high. Can you just give me something? And the faster you knock me out, the better. And so he gives me some stuff and I'm like, by that time, I'm like, I'm good. I'm not feeling all that nervous about the actual procedure, which only takes about an hour and a half or something. But they do have to knock you out with general anesthesia, which was a risk in itself. But anyway, I went through it, and it was amazing. It turned out I had five hernias. My God, I had an indirect and direct inguinal hernia, which means it's in your pelvis area, on both sides, plus an umbilical. And I'm like, oh my God, I didn't even give birth to any children or anything. How the hell did, it's not like I was lifting weights or something, but I think it was just over the years. I know my father and my brother both had hernia surgery, but, and so I was a little nervous about it, but the surgery went well and everything seemed to get fixed up and it's been about 2 months now. And I wouldn't say I'm back to normal, but I'm almost, you know, it can take up to 6 months to feel completely normal, but within about a month or 6 weeks I would say I was feeling pretty well and pretty functional. Occasionally I'll feel like a little pain down there. They put in these mesh things to back up your weakened muscles and what have you, and then there's scar tissue and all this other stuff. But anyway, it was I guess you could call that traumatic, but I seemed to get through it pretty well, so I was very pleased. My doctor was amazing. She seemed to know what she was doing. really trusted her, even though I think she was somehow involved in this misdiagnosis that sent me to the emergency room. But anyway, I stuck with her, and she did a great job on the surgery. So anyway, I'll just leave it at that. I did get the appeal put in for the emergency room visit. I won the appeal. I haven't got the money back yet, but because I paid it, but under protest. But I'm supposed to get that. But the funny thing was that the surgery turned out to cost me exactly $435, which is even cheaper than the emergency room visit. And the charges on the itemized statement were approximately $30,000. And about, I would say, roughly at least 6 to 10 times more expensive than my emergency room visit. But it ended up costing me less. Well, I found that was very ironic. I'm not quite sure why. My deductible is $500. And something else played into it. But I thought for sure I was going to have to owe some kind of significant thousands of dollars amount. So I guess what I'm saying in the end is, you know, I'm a big critic of the medical establishment and the way things are run, and insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies and the rest of it. But, you know, I managed to manage my pain without any opioids, which was great. This was a success story. This was a good experience overall. If I had to go through the experience, I had no choice. It was not an elective surgery. Yeah, I thought they were going to question all sorts of things, but it went very smoothly. And, you know, two months out, everything looks like it's taken care of and over and done with. Knock on wood. Hopefully there are no complications in the future, but I'm pleased. I'm pleased that I'm over that. But that was quite a bit of mental stress for me. I mean, I haven't even got into my mom because I'm sort of still processing that in a way. I had to, in a way, block it out because, you know, I could only deal with so much. And my sister was doing most of the end-of-life care, because that's how we had split our care from my mother. My sister had done quite a bit of care when earlier. Then I did a whole bunch. And then they decided to move out of the area that I'm living with. And at that point, it was up to them to put together whatever care they needed. So, but she had my support, my sister. And my mom, of course, we had some conversations and, you know, heart-to-hearts and some communication via video conference. And that was all we could really do. I couldn't travel at the time. And there was a huge snowstorm where she was, which complicated her care, too. But the hospice there, in this case, was stellar. Didn't charge her a cent. And, you know, my mother was cremated, and we're going to have a memorial service come summer when my daughter and I can go and everybody can get together for it. So, where her ashes are going to be spread. So, anyway, lots of stuff going on. I would say that's the stuff that is concerning. Of course, in world politics, there's a whole bunch of very scary stuff going on, connected to elections and, you know, this overall tendency of the conservative side of politics to rear its ugly head. And, you know, I think it's really just gotten so absurd that people have to defend themselves against, you know, these really straw man kind of arguments. But anyway, of course, the war in Ukraine is still going on. The war in Gaza is still going on. And, of course, there was this recent attack by Iran on Israel. Now, I'm going to get into all those subjects. I'm sure my opinion will be very unpopular. But I think it's, you know, if you step back a little bit, I think it's relatively sober assessment. Of course, in the heat of the moment, everybody, it's like going to court, you know, each side is going to give its all in terms of trying to make the best argument for their cause. But, you know, in the end, that's not really the truth. That's the truth through the eyes of people who are advocating for a position. I think I'm going to come at it from a more independent kind of view, just based on the patterns of history, if anything. But anyway, there was some positive news too going on. My friend and my collaborator, Carrie Morin, who is a stellar musician, has released his album finally in January 25th, I believe it was, called Innocent Allies. It is, in my view, a masterpiece. It's an amazing set of songs that are all connected by theme. The theme being Charles Russell and Western painting. But Carrie is from the Crow Nation, and so he sees it from the Native American view as well, and it's just a beautiful treatment of it. You know, basically 100 years after all these events happened. But Carrie is a masterful songwriter, masterful guitar player, masterful, you know, vocalist. So I really encourage you. I'm going to have a show on his new album called Innocent Allies, Carrie Morin. So check that out. I guess I finished a novel of mine. It's going to be hopefully published soon. It's called Island of the Women. Been working on that for about 2 years. Finished that, I think, sometime in must have been February, March. And then I have four other things coming out through Ivory Joe Press. Two novellas that I had written many years before that I have packaged up to be published. And so those should be following. And then Aubrey Argento has two novellas as well coming out just around the same time. My current work is I'm in a bit of a transition period because I'm going to have to do a little bit less of the creative stuff and a little bit more of the psychotherapy starting in May. I'm going to be doing some supervising MSW students for their practice hours in order to get their LCSWs. So that's a new thing for me, but I'm going to be spending, I don't know if it's majority of my time, but much more time in that domain. So the creative thing is probably going to slow down, but I'm going to try to keep up with the podcast, of course. And so I hope this all works in concert. It should. It's looking like everything's going to work out okay. I guess the only other thing that I forgot to mention about myself was that I also have this ophthalmological issue. I'm not sure why. It seems to be a mystery, but my eyes are, maybe it has to do with being a writer and, you know, I'm using my eyes so much. But, you know, I have this problem where I have too much pressure in my eyes. And so it was discovered when I went to get some new glasses. And so I had to go, got a referral to the ophthalmologist after that, because it was my pressure was slightly elevated, and then it became even more elevated, and they're not sure why, and it hasn't gotten any higher. But they had to figure out what was going on with my eyes, because as far as I can tell, nothing else is wrong with them. And, you know, everything looks great. The retina looks great. The cornea looks great. Everything looks great, except for this pressure thing. So luckily, usually this is a condition that comes with glaucoma, and I have no history of that in my family, so it's a bit of a mystery to the ophthalmologist, but the good news is that he gave me some drops I take once a night, and the pressure's gone way down into normal range, and so as long as I keep taking these drops, ultimately you could, I think, get to the point where you go blind. But I'm hoping that doesn't happen, obviously. The ophthalmologist is not too concerned, I guess. But the thing that's really interesting about it is that these drops, I went to the store to get a 2.5-ounce bottle, which is literally not even the tip of your pinky finger big. And it ended up costing me, with insurance, $150. So there's another thing you have to think about the pharmaceutical companies, right? In Canada, you could buy about, did a little research on it after I got over the sticker shock. I guess I'm happy I'm not, there is a medicine I can use, so I'm not going to, you know, be visually impaired or potentially blind by the end of my life. But The other side of it is I'm going to be paying, you know, 1,000 something a year to get this medication. And in Canada, you can get 3 times as much for a third of the price. So basically, sticker shock here is, even though, the whole deal, we're getting gouged, right? Because our system doesn't bargain with the pharmaceutical companies, and many of them are based in the United States. And many of the patents, I'm not sure about this one. It's Lumigan. It doesn't have a generic at the moment. In Canada, you can get a generic, apparently, which is a little bit less expensive, but not dramatically less expensive. So that's another kind of a negative thing in my life that that I'm a little concerned about. But what can you do? Life is life, and I'll just have to deal with it. Hopefully, it won't have a major impact on me. And in this case, thank you, pharmaceutical companies, because you got to report the bad good news with the bad news, right? I guess the only other thing I wanted to bring up, because I'm not going to really go into detail on any of these topics yet. I'm going to go into detail that as over the next couple of days, and I might just go back to the news just to catch myself up and catch other people up with the news. I mean, I have been working very hard to get these 4 pieces, these shorter pieces, published. So my whole last month was really concerned with that. So I'm very happy. I just finished that yesterday. It's going off to the printer, and everything should be good with that. So I can let that go with my taxes. So I'm really in this transition state. But I did want to mention an amazing movie I saw the other day, which is called Close Your Eyes by a Spanish director named Victor Erice. And so this guy is amazing. So my sister came for a visit just before the shit hit the fan here, sometime in, I think it was November. And we were spending time watching movies and having a good time during the Thanksgiving season. And she mentioned this director to me, and I said, I never heard of this director. Oh, he's a Spanish director, and he's only made th three films. And she didn't know at the time that there was another one coming out, right now. And so there was a film festival in the city here, and it was part of that film festival. And I'm so glad I went, because not only I only saw one of his previous movies, because the other two are not available. And it's kind of a mystery as to why, I guess, the director hasn't made more movies, because they're freaking masterpieces. That's all I can say. This new movie is just spellbinding, and the acting is just, I mean, just incredible. And the cinematography and the story itself, it is just one of the most beautiful movies I've ever seen in my life. And so, very much influenced by Bergman, I'm sure, and by Tarkovsky and other great directors. But wow, and probably Ozu, the Japanese director. I felt that immediately. And those are, those directors are some of my heroes. So anyway, if you get a chance to see Victor Erice's Close Your Eyes, please go see it. I think you will be, I mean, I was blown away. The reviews in The Guardian are a little weird. I don't know what you can say. If the only thing a film critic can talk about is how long the movie is, it is 2.5 hours, but it goes by very quickly. I just kind of dismissed that, and Peter Bradshaw's review was better, but it just seemed it didn't seem in proportion to how great this movie actually is. He thought it was good, but he didn't seem like he was completely blown away by it like I was. And I think there are reasons for that, because critics can't really report truthfully anymore. It used to be that they could. And so you have to always be a little bit, whenever you read a review in a mainstream publication, just always put an asterisk, because behind the review is a lot of politics, right? And so, but just go see the movie. It's gorgeous. I think it's probably one of the best movies I've seen in, there must be a handful I've seen over the last 10 years that are on this level. So please go see it. Anyway, I'm going to stop here, because otherwise we're going to get overly long, and I will come back in the next few days with another podcast. But I've missed doing these podcasts, and I'm very glad that I've gotten through the worst of what I had to get through there. We'll be talking a little bit about that. But anyway, it's Giovanni McGuire again, and it's April 17th, 2024. And this is the first podcast of many more to come. So that's it for the By Jove Show for today. Talk to you soon.